with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hey, everybody. Welcome into a Thursday edition of the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM alongside former NFL GM Michael Lombardi hanging out at his place in Jersey. Stormy Bonatoni here at Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. We've got the playoffs, the PGA Championship, and the Preakness this week. A great guest list to help us break it all down as well. Mike Somich, who had the Kentucky Derby winner Mage, will join us later on in hour two to preview the Preakness coming up this Saturday. VSiN contributor Will Hill has been great on the NBA. We'll have him later on. And in about 30 minutes, with everything going on with your 76ers, Michael, lucky to have our guy Eitan Shander of the Philly Voice talk through everything with the Doc firing and the James Harden questions. But where I want to start with you today is how about the Miami Heat, who erupt for a 46-point third quarter last night. And, Michael, I didn't even get to see half of it because I have YouTube TV, and I am one of the many people whose TV just decided that it wasn't going to work during the game last night. It was not my favorite thing.
Wow, I didn't realize that. I didn't know that. That's horrible to have it cut out like that. It's good to be back with you, Stormy. I always enjoy it. It's a good start of the week. I thought last night was a classic example of, you know, Boston losing their focus mm-hmm. in the third quarter. And they thought they had control of the game, and yet Boston was able to make the game closer at halftime and then in the third quarter erupted. And I think when you look at the stats, you know, obviously Butler was sensational. So was Bam Adebayo. They got a lot of points from their bench. Kyle Lowry even played well for them, Martin. But I think when you look at it, they shot 50% from the two-point line and they shot 50% from the three-point line. And, you know, Boston's defense has to take responsibility for that. Where was Boston's defense? And the Heat are just playing with such confidence right now that, you know, Butler can do whatever he wants, get any shot that he needs to get off, and they played well enough down the stretch to close the game out. So it didn't surprise me at all because I think Miami, for all the numbers we talk about during the season, they are a different team now. And with Love, they got another shooter on the court. So, and they're still missing two of the two players that they counted on.
Yeah, the hope obviously to get Kyle Lowry back here relatively soon. But we talked about, you know, the Celtics coming off a very emotional Game 7 win over the Philadelphia 76ers. Home court hasn't been particularly great to them here in the postseason. They are 10-11 their last 21 home playoff games, 2-4 straight up their last six this postseason. And we saw the Heat already last playoff series be able to get that early Game 1 win. So this is a Heat team that I think it's safe to say has more than a 3% chance to win this series, like we saw in some of those early projections. But to your point about Jimmy Butler, 35 points, 7 assists, 5 rebounds, 6 steals. That's Butler's second career playoff game with at least 35, 5, 5, and 5, joining Michael Jordan and Allen Iverson as the only people who have done it more than once in NBA history. And he also is a big believer that they can get this thing done. Here's him postgame.
How does this feel to you guys, what you have done so far? And if you go back all the way to that night against Chicago in the play-in, did you think then that something like this would be possible?
Damn right. I did. Damn right. We did. And the best part about it is we still don't care what none of y'all think. Honestly speaking, we don't care if you pick us to win. We never have. We never will. We know the group of guys we have in this locker room. We know that Coach Spo put so much confidence and belief in each and every one of us, Coach Pat as well. And so our circle's small, but this circle got so much love for one another. We pump constant confidence into everybody. And we go out there and we hoop. We play basketball the right way, knowing that we always got a chance.
I love the confidence, Michael.
Yeah, play basketball the right way. They do, you know, and their star player plays well at the most critical time, which is what you need. And they are the right culture. They have a mindset. Even when they got behind by 12 in the game, you know, they have this belief in themselves that they can fight their way through adversity. And as Spoelstra said during the season, the adversity is what really has made them a better team because it didn't go as script. They weren't the number one seed. They had to play in. And I don't think you can underestimate the resolve of the team. I think this us against the world mentality certainly generates a really wonderful combination of players playing at their highest level. So, look, Boston takes their eye off the ball way too many times, and we thought Spoelstra would do a really good job of crafting a game plan. And if you're Boston, you're sitting there saying to yourself, look, you know, we shot 52% from the field. We didn't make as many three-pointers, but we had a chance. We just let our defense slip away, and they're going to have to fix that.
Final score, 123-116. Heat cash is a 3-1 money line dog. The total goes well over any number because of exactly what you were just saying there with the shooting performance. Celtics go from a $5.5 favorite to now -210, Heat +170 in the series. And now they're faced with a situation with, can the Celtics bounce back? We have that zigzag theory, right? The team that loses game one at home more often than not, the stretch is like 20-2 against the spread, 21-1 straight up, that they have bounced back in game two. What do you make of the game two opening line? Celtics -8.5, -9, total 215.5.
Yeah, I think it's going to get pushed up because I think people take into the account that, you know, Miami went up there with a purpose to win one game, and they got that purpose resolved. And so now they can come back home. But this is a little bit of a different team. I don't get the sense that Miami's going to just back off. Now, if the game gets out of hand, maybe they rest Butler, maybe they rest some of their players for the game three in Miami. But to me, this is a tough-minded team. And Spoelstra's coaching to win every game. So, you know, I think the line's going to go up because the perception is they've got control. That's what they wanted, and they're going to go home. But I wouldn't rule anything out of Boston. Now, here's the reality. Can they continue to shoot 50% from the three-point line? I think that's, if you're betting this and laying the points, you're hanging your hat that they won't shoot as well the next time they play.
Jimmy Butler, though, so fun to watch, that will to win, the grit, the want to be better than everybody else on the court. Definitely making me like some of my pre-series bets that I talked about on the show earlier this week, with Jimmy Butler to be the leading scorer in the series or to have the highest scoring game, single game in this set. So we'll see if those can ultimately come to fruition for me here. But we have another game coming up tonight, game two of the Western Conference Final. We've got the Lakers at the Nuggets here, total 226.5. Denver, 5.5-point favorite. That total shot up like 4 points. Had a great opening game. Lakers were down as many as 21 in the third quarter, come roaring back to bring it within three. They just couldn't finish the job. Michael, do you think that they can pick up where they left off the other night?
I was really impressed when I went back and watched the game again. I was impressed. You know, everybody we talked about, the Lakers not having the ability to play with the altitude, that the longer the game went, the less effective they would become because they're playing at a mile high. And I felt like they got stronger as the game went on, and they had an opportunity that LeBron turns that ball over in the post inside the paint, and it leads to, you know, they extend the lead, they get it back up to 5 again. And I think that was a critical play. You know, I mean, look, Denver is, we know Denver is really a good team, and they, you know, with Jokic is just remarkable about what he does. The three-pointer he makes at the end of a whistle is just like, how about Anthony Davis' reactions to that? I mean, he just said, like, what am I supposed to do?
Yep.
Yeah, like, what am I supposed to do? This guy's unbelievable. The way he runs the floor, I think the Lakers are right where they're happy with where they were. They didn't play their best early. They kind of found their groove, and they had a chance to win game one in a game they should have never been that close to. So I think they feel fairly confident. And this whole notion about altitude or humidity or whatever the hell it is, I don't think it matters.
They did make an adjustment there in that fourth quarter, specifically when it came to how they were guarding Jokic and having Rui Hachimura be that final defender, give the opportunity for Anthony Davis to roam around a little bit. But we know Jokic is so good. Even if they were to start the game like that, I feel like Jokic has the ability to figure that out and still play to his ability, no?
Yeah, I think, I mean, Jokic has got great instincts. I mean, you know, his just feel for the game. It's like he's got that sense. We talked about it with Bryce Young at Alabama. You know, that ability to read and anticipate and see things that others don't. You know, Hachimura, I mean, I don't understand how the Wizards just let this guy go. Like, they gave him away for basically nothing. I mean, it was truly, like, when he played at Gonzaga, I thought he was one of the – I was surprised he hasn't really ascended. And then when I watch him play for the Lakers, I'm like, wow, this guy's really played well. And you wonder why the Wizards can't win?
I wonder what to do with this total tonight, because it's obviously like ticked up a good bit here, but the opening game, we see 258 points on the board. It looked like Denver at certain points just couldn't miss. But similar to kind of what you were saying about the Heat and their ability to shoot, I wonder how much of that is replicable here again in game two. And you could make the same argument even for the Lakers. Like, are you going to have that production off the bench from Rui Hachimura? Is Austin Reeves going to be able to score at the rate that he did? High total tonight.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, remember, the Lakers are the best defensive team in the league since the All-Star break, yeah. Right? And so, and they put up, and they allowed 132. And, you know, they were able to, they created 11 turnovers. They were plus four in the turnover margin, and yet they still gave up 132 points. So, obviously, they're going to have to make some defensive adjustments. And I don't know if Denver can shoot as well as they did. What I loved about Denver in the game is when it became close, Denver didn't buckle. Denver didn't give in. Denver didn't pull the, oh, no, I can't believe this is happening. Denver fought back. There was some resolve there. You got to give them credit for that. I think iron builds iron. Iron pounding iron creates strength. And I think you got to give some credit there. Now, can the Lakers do it another night? I think that's the question. You know, can LeBron do what he did in the game? Can he come back? I thought he was great in that game. I thought he looked like he was 10 years younger.
Yep, one assist shy of a triple-double for him. AD had 40 and 10, but it still looked like a quiet performance compared to the numbers that we saw from Nikola Jokic. So we'll see who rises to the occasion tonight in Game 2. Again, the Nuggets, a 5.5-point favorite tonight. They are 7-0, straight up perfect this postseason when playing at Ball Arena. We got to take a quick break here, Michael, but when we come back, we will talk about your 76ers, Daryl Morey, speaking to the media this week after the firing of Doc Rivers, and of course, what's going to happen with James Harden opting out of that final year.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM has all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and more. Download the BetMGM app today and stop by any MGM casino on the strip with your state-issued ID. Open up an account and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-422-4700. That's 522-4700. Excuse me. Not good with phone numbers, you know. We have to. We don't have to remember them anymore, Michael, because we have everything our phones these days.
I know, it's amazing, right? I used to be good at remembering numbers too. I could call people. You know, still remember Joel Buschbaum's phone number. You know, it's funny how you kind of have those numbers in your head, but now you don't even work that memory part of your brain. You just kind of sit there and say, tell Siri to make phone calls for you.
Right? I still have my like parents' old landline in my head, but I can't remember my fiance's phone number to save my life, and we've been together for 7 years, so help me out here. We got some movement when it comes to the Philadelphia 76ers after firing Doc Rivers earlier this week. Michael, Daryl Morey was talking to media for the first time. We do have a couple of the sound bites here that we'll play. But generally speaking, what were just some of your takeaways from hearing Morey on the decision?
You know, I thought that, you know, they don't really understand who they are as an organization, nor do they understand what they need. I think when you hire Doc and you understand Doc's career, Doc is not a guy you want to hire for a team that needs to develop young players around other players. I mean, Doc is, you know, he wants veteran guys. He wants to just put the ball out there and let them play. You know, there's never any, how do I make a guy better? You say, well, they made Maxey better. No, let's put this in perspective. Maxey only got in the game in the Atlanta series 2 years ago because he had no other options. He kind of kept him on the bench for most of the year. Doc is what we call in pro football a progress stopper. If you want to make progress, don't hire Doc. If you've got Pierce, Garnett, and Ray Allen, hire Doc. He's great for that. So to me, that was a misjudgment of what you really need as a coach. And it brought star power, brought name appeal, but at some point you got to develop talent. As I've said before, the process is ridiculous. It's a Ponzi scheme because there's no player development. Who's making the players better? And that's certainly not where Doc shines as a coach. So it didn't surprise me. I was told reliably, Stormy, that on Monday, They notified Doc that he was coming back, and then apparently Harden said, "I'm not coming back if Doc comes back." And they changed, and Maury and Elton Brand went down and had a meeting with the coaches and told him to leave. They told Doc that he was no longer coming back. Now, naturally, they're going to deny that. Maury denied that in the press conference, but I think there's more to it than meets the eye.
No, that's stunning and gives you a little more insight as to when James Harden was questioned at that one press conference about what his relationship was like with Doc Rivers, and he just says, "Oh, our relationship's okay." Meanwhile, we know that Joel Embiid does care about Doc Rivers and had a good relationship with him. Here's Maury talking about that reaction from Embiid and how to handle it moving forward.
I think it's natural to be very close with the people in the locker room. He was very close with Coach Rivers. And, yeah, he was shocked about the change. And, and it's my job to help convince him that the new coach is someone that he'll have a great relationship with as well.
Michael, what does that tell you about Harden's influence over Maury, especially given that he's decided to opt out of next year? He's going to hit free agency, which will likely mean either their 76ers returning to them or going to the Houston Rockets, versus the impact that Embiid, who is your MVP, has on Maury.
Well, I think, Embiid loves Doc because he got the MVP season. Doc does everything to cater him to him, so why wouldn't Embiid love Doc? I mean, Doc never demanded he get in shape. Doc never really demanded anything. He kind of let him go along. Yeah. I think that the way the NBA is, the players have a lot of influence in these decisions, and clearly Maury's listening to him. Maury's listening to him and reacting to it, and this is what's wrong, is you got to figure out what your team needs. Now, we'll know how much influence Harden has on this team is Mike D'Antoni is the next coach, because that's who Harden wants.
Right.
That's who Harden wants to be the coach. Could you imagine Embiid running up and down the court in that offense? I can't, Stormy. I really can't. Then I think if that happens, then we'll see Embiid want to get traded. We'll see. I mean, Maury's put all his chips in on Harden. For a guy who's analytical, right, for a guy who bases his life on analytics and never really has been involved in sports other than analytics, he refuses to look at the analytics on Harden. He has a bias. One of the reasons you use analytics is because you want to eliminate bias. You want to say, okay, I'm a little too close to this. What do the numbers say? Mm-hmm. No, he's saying go all for it. I mean, could you imagine being an owner and giving Harden $200 million guaranteed? I mean, what would you say? Like, it's not hard to say that's a dumb decision.
We will have Eitan Shander come on the program after this next commercial break, and I'm very curious. Obviously, he covers Philly sports very, very closely, what his opinion is on what the 76ers do moving forward, because you kind of are locked in with Harden, no? What can you do if you don't have him?
Right. I mean, I had somebody text me today, well, they'll trade Tobias Harris and Maxey and try to get Dame Lillard, if Harden opts out. I don't know how many cards Maury has left to play. He was very confident at that press conference that they've gone through every scenario, Harden in, Harden out, and they have a pathway to get there. Now, when I read columns about their salary cap and I read about the pathway, I don't get that sense. But he clearly did. And look, at the end of the day, Maury's all about asset management. He's not about team building. He doesn't care about culture. It's about acquiring talent. When he said at the press conference, look, I don't mess with the strategy of the game. I let the coach do that. Well, players create the strategy. And if you don't match the strategy to the players, I'm on basketball and I want to go to football here. My mind doesn't shift as it once used to do. But, when you look at the teams that their quarterbacks are enhanced, Brock Purdy, why was he good? Well, Brock Purdy was good because his talents matched the system. The strategy enabled him to be good. Like, that's important. You bring a player into your system that fits what you're trying to accomplish. You can't have the mindset of, I'm just going to collect talent. Because talent has to work within the framework of the system. This is what I have a big issue with, and this is what I've had a big issue with all these guys that project this asset management building as if it really is going to matter.
We will get back to this talk, like I said, in just a little bit. But while you're talking about systems and players matching the system, Davante Adams did an interview with The Ringer earlier this week, and he was talking a lot about how the offensive vision for the Raiders isn't matching up with what he anticipated, what he wants. He says that he as a player doesn't have enough time for a rebuild, which clearly is kind of the pace that this Vegas team is on right now. He says, quote, "We don't see eye to eye," meaning him and management, "on what we think is best for us right now, has reservations about the offensive plans." When you heard that from your star wide receiver, from your franchise player on this team, what do you think of immediately?
Well, I kind of don't. I would like to have him explain to me, you know, the NFL is never about rebuilding. I mean, here's a team last year that had opportunities to win a lot of close games down the stretch. And for whatever reason, and it wasn't Devontae's fault that they didn't win those games. I mean, you know, go to the Pittsburgh game, 3rd and 5, you know, and Carr throws the ball out of bounds. The Tennessee game, you know, they turn the ball over in the red zone. There's so many of these games you can go through chapter and verse. And, you know, they've got to find a way to get Devontae the ball when it's the most critical time. I think he doesn't want to rebuild. No player wants to rebuild. No player had star power. I think he also said in that column about how he's vindicated himself that he doesn't need Aaron Rodgers to prove he's a great talent. I never doubted that for a moment. I think the connection is we got to say, look, the Raiders are a game plan specific offense. They're going to get him the ball every week, no matter what they have to do. He'd line up in the slot, line up outside, line up in the back. Whatever we got to do to get Davante Adams the ball, we're going to get him the football. I mean, I think that's going to be the selling point. And so I'm sure they're having conversations with him behind the scenes about that. And I think every player wants to make sure that they feel like this next year we're all in to win a title. And I think the culture within their locker room has improved. Now, they got to get some of these players to play better. They got to get the tight end Michael Mayer to play at a high level. They got to get that offensive line to play good. But they were close in a lot of games. They can break through.
I understand, like, maybe being dismayed a little bit that you trade my best friend, who essentially is what lured me to come to Vegas in the first place. Like, I understand the frustration and not seeing eye to eye on that standpoint, but I feel like being such a featured wide receiver, one of the best in the NFL, if not considered the best wide receiver that there is right now, to not think you're going to get the ball or not get the ball that you want to, maybe he's just thinking Josh McDaniel too much trying to get those first down instead of giving him more shots deep downfield. But it's only May. There's still so much more time to figure out what this offense is going to be and what areas you're good at with Jimmy Garoppolo. We got to take a break, Michael. We're up against it. But when we come back, we will have Mr. Eitan Shanter join us, betting host at Fox 29, writer for the Philly Voice. Talk more about this 76ers situation and then some.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today, and you'll get a daily email recapping all the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You'll also get unlimited access to the VSiN.com/picks page, where you can sort picks by sport, matchup, event date, and more. Check out the top VSiN experts leaderboard, where you can view betting records, profit, and ROI. See which VSiN expert has the hot hand at any given time. But you got to become a subscriber. VSiN Pro Picks, betting splits, power ratings. Plus, we've got 24/7 video access as well. When you become a VSiN Pro subscriber today, just $9.99 at VSiN.com/subscribe. Rolling along on the Lombardi Line. And Michael, social media stances are alive and well. We love when players scrub their social media and do all of the things. We saw it with Kyler
Murray. It's protocol.
It's just what they do now. It's what they do now. We were trying to connect to our guy, Eitan Shanter at the Philly Voice. Hopefully we can get him on to continue our 76ers talk. But in the meantime, so much going on in the NFL. Most notably right now, top of mind, Quinnen Williams in this situation where he has changed his Twitter bio amid the contract battle with the Jets. It now says defensive tackle for dot, 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 dot. And his cover photo also shows him with the Alabama Crimson Tide, not with the Jets. Also, just adding some more notes to this, his most recent post on his Twitter is a retweet of Adam Schefter on defensive tackle Dexter Lawrence's contract extension with the Giants. So he's not bitter, Michael.
No. Well, I mean, look, he's due to make $9 million this year, right? So he knows that Payne in Washington got a new deal. He knows Hargrave got a huge deal from the 49ers in free agency. He knows that the Tennessee Titans redid Jeffrey Simmons' deal. And he just crossed town. He saw Dexter Lawrence get a new deal. So there's enough new deals there that he should get a new deal, and he deserves a new deal. He's the best player defensively on the Jets. Now, they've added a lot of pieces defensively. You know, they signed C.J. Mosley. They owe him $17 million, right? You know, they've signed a bunch of guys. So I think, to me, you know, this is, shouldn't be a hard contract to do. This is a contract that needs to get done. Plus, Stormy, the Jets have a lot of dead weight they're carrying that they can clear out to pay Williams.
It's just a matter of the range, I think, with which he gets paid. Which, and we'll revisit this in a moment. But we do have Eitan on the line now, betting host at Fox 29, writer at the Philly Voice, at Shander Show on Twitter. Eitan Shander joins us now. And, you know, Doc Rivers, Eitan, his mission was to get the 76ers over the hump, and that hasn't happened. So what has the reaction been from you seeing Doc out with Philly?
I think it's a good, healthy amount of what took this so long to why did we have to sit through this to, yeah, you know, Doc, it wasn't as bad as it's made seem on the way out. If you were creating a pie chart of that kind of in thirds. But the majority of people recognized that Doc Rivers was just not the guy to bring this team over that hump. And ultimately, when you look back at his tenure here in Philadelphia, he did not do what Brett Brown couldn't do either, and that's get out of this second round. And the historic failures that we've seen associated in Game 7 and blowing leads in the postseason, you can't run this back. You can't bring back similar components with Embiid, Tyrese Maxey, and anyone else who may fit that and expect that this would be the year. That was this year, and it failed. It failed miserably. They were humiliated in Game 7.
No doubt. I read your article about Embiid, and you're one of the few writers that I think actually has seen the positives along with the negatives of Embiid. We recognize his talent, but we also recognize that his conditioning is below par, and there's parts of his game that needs work. But will he be willing to work on it? How does this all change if he's never going to get in shape? You know, I was disappointed yesterday. No one asked Daryl Morey if he thought Embiid was in great shape.
Yeah, Michael, first off, thank you. I appreciate that. That goes a long way with me. So I definitely appreciate the kind words. The fact that you made it through the article is a big one. So looking at it, you're right. There has to be a change in voice with Joel Embiid, but that's cliche, right? You've been around sports. Both of you have been around sports a long time to know the difference of cliche versus actualizing something. They thought, the Sixers, pre-Daryl Morey, thought that Doc Rivers could be the person to catalyze Joel Embiid, for lack of a better term, and really get him over the hump. I think what we've seen, to be fair to Joel, right, I think what we've seen now, the end result is the same, which is he looks banged up, he's hurt, he looks out of shape because he's missed time and he has to readjust. So I get it. The end is the end. But I think the difference the past couple of years has been the means to the end, meaning this. Leading up to the past really 3 years, Joel Embiid's conditioning, just in the regular season, coming in out of shape, just not being top form, wore his body down. I think he did address that, and I think he did get in better, not prime, but better shape. The problem, and I think this is ultimately what undid Embiid physically and really the team, is they put every single possible egg into the basket of get Joel Embiid the MVP. Keep Joel Embiid out there. No load management, right? I mean, that really hurt the team this year.
You don't want him to be the lead scorer every year if he doesn't have to be, right? Get some help around him. Don't do the lack of load management thing. So who is the head coach that will get the most out of him? The names that are available that have connections to Philly, Monty Williams was an assistant there. Nick Nurse coached under Daryl Morey previously. Mike D'Antoni, who Michael and I talked about a little bit earlier, been out of the league the last few years, but a strong connection with James Harden. Who can get the most out of this guy?
Well, I think from a betting standpoint, there's probably still some good value on a guy inside already in Sam Cassell. Coach Cassell, Sam, we know him as the player, right, in my age bracket, right? But he has turned into, just as he was a point guard who would bark and demand and command, he has done that as an assistant. A lot of us thought he would be the heir apparent to it. So I think Sam Cassell is an option. He is somebody inside the building who, and not to really, you know, dance on anyone's professional grave, but sat and watched a lot of what not to do in the playoffs this last season, right here, right up through game seven, as far as Doc mishandling a lot of things. But to the point of voice, he has been able to reach and I think connect with Joel Embiid to an extent. Mike D'Antoni, you mentioned him. I'll run through these brief as far as, you know, with the options. Mike D'Antoni is simply Daryl Morey going to James Harden and saying, I want you to stay. We're going to give you some money. We're also going to give you a guy that makes you happy. I think Monty Williams on paper makes sense as someone who can step in and demand from Joel Embiid. I just don't know if the lack of resume, the lack of professional success as a head coach, the failures that we've seen in Phoenix, not it's all on him. I'm not saying by any means, but that kind of wavers a little bit. Nick Nurse is one. I think he's a better coach than Bud. Budenholzer fired in Milwaukee. So it's probably going to come down to Monty Williams or Nick Nurse, definitely not J.J. Redick. And I don't know how excited you can get about either one of those guys, despite Nick Nurse even winning.
Yeah, I mean, look, I want somebody who's going to demand, somebody who's going to hold people accountable, which wasn't what Doc did. And, you know, and as for as much heat as Brett Brown took, he tried to, you know, but he couldn't really get the support of the front office to do it. That's going to be the key component. Somebody going to support the coach when they demand from the players. I'm not sure that could happen. But let me ask you this. You cover the team closer. What is the love affair that Morey has with Harden, that since he's so analytical that he refuses to look at the analytics and he's going to have his career basically defined by one player?
The only thing I can think of as you're asking that question, Michael, is that he is working on some sort of like 5-year ahead analytic about how Harden can get to the line. And that is truly better than anything else that you could come from a possession, which you and I and all of us know is completely hogwash. But I don't know the answer to that without he is just blind and he has a small blind spot for Harden. The Harden experiment has failed. Not only did it fail with James Harden, it failed with every individual that he brought in collectively. PJ Tucker had some moments, don't get me wrong, D'Anthony Melton. I'm not saying that these guys were bad for the team, but this past offseason was all about, to your point, bringing in James Harden, then appeasing James Harden. What? Joel Embiid is the MVP. Joel Embiid is the most recent MVP. He's the most recent guy who could dominate a game. And instead, Daryl Morey had this blind spot about James Harden coming in. Harden has to go. Tobias Harris has to go. D'Anthony Melton, PJ Tucker, these contracts, they have to go. You have to find a way to now jettison this movement and bring it back into building around Joel Embiid. But you also, like you said, need front office support to make sure that if there is chastising, if there is reprimanding, if there is getting in somebody's rear, whatever it may be, you have support. Neither Doc Rivers nor Brett Brown truly had that support, no matter what you hear. I don't believe that either one of them truly had the support to go up to Joel Embiid and correct change. I don't even think they had the support to do that with Ben Simmons.
Yep, true. That's why Butler's not there. Aiton, really appreciate you coming on today.
Don't pour salt on my wounds, sir.
Thank you, Aiton.
I love Jimmy. Thank you, Stormy. Thank you, Michael.
Appreciate your time. Hate that we were up against it because it was just starting to get fiery. Wish we could have him a little bit longer. We have to take a quick break. We will also revisit that Quinnen Williams conversation when we start hour two. But up next on the program, Will Hill has some plays in the NBA coming up tonight, Michael.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, laces up with a playoff parlay insurance offer. Place a one-game parlay of four legs or more, and you get a bonus bet up to $25, even if you miss one leg. Enjoy the playoffs like never before with BetMGM's daily promotions, boosted odds specials, and parlay selection features throughout the playoffs here. Log in now or sign up and opt in to get back up to $25 in bonus bets if one leg or one-game parlay falls short. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to please play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 and up only. New customer offer. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offer not available in Mississippi, Nevada, and New York. Back here live on the Lombardi Line alongside Michael Lombardi. I'm Stormy Bonantoni, and we welcome into the show VSiN contributor Will Hill at not the Will Hill on Twitter. And Will, I usually do a pretty good job of being a stalker and knowing all of your plays at all times, but I didn't see what you had last night. Did you at all envision the Heat coming away with a 3-1 money line win, my friend?
I did take Miami plus the points, but I found a Boston plus 450 to sweep, which I was stupid enough to take a shot at. The thing is, I didn't think Butler looked healthy against the Knicks series. And I thought, you know what, if Butler's not going to be healthy, the Celtics, maybe they'll just they'll get over this little thing they do where they just, you know, sort of fall asleep at the wheel here. And Butler looked healthy last night. And if he's going to be healthy, he's the best player in the series. I know Tatum's good. I know Brown's good. Butler's the best if he's healthy. And Boston's got a big problem on their hands. When you lose game one at home, usually you're looking at a long series. So I would expect a long series tomorrow. You know, as far as the game tomorrow night, like 8.5, 9. Miami's the one team where I know when you win game one on the road, you always get blown out in game two. Miami's the one team where they're just so mentally tough, so focused that they might, you know, be the one team that I'm not sure is going to get blown out tomorrow. They did hang in against the Knicks after winning game one on the road. In that series. That being said, you mentioned it's like a 21-2 trend here with the road team losing game one. That's not a trend I'm going to look to step that far enough. So I'm not playing the game yet.
You know, Butler didn't play in that game two against the Knicks, and they almost beat the Knicks in that game, if you remember. And so, yeah, I'm with you. I think their mindset is to play it, and they're going to see if they can beat them. I mean, this is about them extending their will onto another team. This isn't about, okay, we're going to do the, okay, analytics says we should go home. We have an 83% chance of winning. Let's go and give up the game. But what I was impressed with is the fact that they both teams shot so well. You know, the Philly-Boston series was under all the time. Boston's defense was really lacking last night. And I don't know if it was because Miami just made shots or whether they just got good looks. And to me, I was surprised the over hit.
Yeah, I thought Miami shot the cover off the ball. I mean, you look at the third quarter, they scored 46 points in the third quarter. Boston scored 50 in the second half, and you usually don't see this. Miami had a 12-point lead in the third quarter. Boston had a 12-point lead in the third quarter. That's very hard to do when you see a 24-point swing, and you go back to that third quarter, which obviously swung the game. Missoula afterwards saying, "Well, we won 3 out of the 4 quarters." Well, that's not how we keep track here. But yeah, they shot 17 of 26, so they only had 9 misses. They got 4 offensive rebounds off those 9 misses. So you're either scoring or you're missing and getting the ball back. It's very hard to win that way when you're basically giving up points every time down. I just thought Miami was incredible from 3, from mid-range. I don't know how sustainable it is, but hey, you only got to win 4 of these. So you already got one in your pocket. You got one on the road. So I think we're looking at another just a tough series. It went 7 last year. Miami beat them a couple years ago in the bubble. This is not going to be a short series, obviously.
The home struggles just continue with the Boston Celtics at TD Garden for whatever reason. And it just goes to show again, Eric Spoelstra and Jimmy Butler, no matter the situation, you can't count those guys out. How about tonight, game 2 of the Western Conference Final ahead of us with the Lakers and Nuggets at Ball Arena in Denver? I mean, what an exciting opening game. If anybody went to sleep at halftime, they missed some exhilaration coming in the fourth quarter. As far as tonight plays out, though, Denver laying 5.5, total 226.5, up about 3 or 4 points from the opening number. We were texting about that as soon as we saw the shift. How do you foresee tonight going?
It's funny. You can look at it both ways. I mean, we talk about Miami shooting the cover off the ball. Denver just shot the ball at an incredible rate. Some tough shots, just, you know, prayers at the end of the shot clock, the end of the quarter buzzers, just incredible 3-point making from Murray, from Jokic. I mean, they hit 14 of their first 27 from 3. They shot 10 of 14 from mid-range. So if you're the Lakers, you can say, you know, we almost won that game and you shot the ball at an unsustainable rate. But if you're Denver, and this is sort of the way I lean, if you're Denver, you can say, well, Davis and LeBron were rested. Davis played great. LeBron played really good. And we still beat you. Now they're not going to be as rested. What are the chances you get a game from Davis, LeBron, and throw Austin Reeves in there, who hit 5 threes and was really efficient? So I kind of think Denver beats them again. I think that was a really good game after the first quarter, which, look, all four quarters count. That was a really good game from L.A. They just played so poorly in the first quarter, not rebounding the ball, transition defense. They dug themselves such a hole. So I think it's such a frustrating loss for L.A. People painting that as a positive for L.A. the other night, I don't really buy it. I think it was a game where you kind of had to win, where you get 40 from Davis. So I don't know that either team has an answer defensively for the other. L.A.'s getting good looks. Denver doesn't have a guy to guard LeBron. But to me, Denver at home here with a little bit of drop-off from LeBron, from Davis, I think Denver gets it done. I'll lay the 5.5 here with the Nuggets. I think it's 2-0. And I will say this. I think whoever wins tonight wins the series. If Denver goes up 2-0, it's going to be hard to beat them. If L.A. can get it to 1-1, it certainly goes in their favor. I always say this. If you're the lower seed and you're serious about winning the series, you kind of have to be up 3-1 after 4. Because if you're 2-2 and 5's on the road, 7's on the road, that's not a good scenario. You really have to be up 3-1 and give yourself 3 chances to clinch it and 1 chance at home. And I think tonight is really the pivotal game here in the series.
I know you like Hachimura to go over his total tonight. I mean, to me, one of the greatest trades you made as the Lakers advisor was to trade 3 second-round picks and Kendrick Dunn for this guy. I mean, like, I don't know how the hell the Wizards – now I know why the Wizards don't win, but why do you like him to have another stellar game?
I think his usage is going to be – I think he's going to replace Russell minutes. I like him over, and I like Russell under. They're correlated. You can play them both together, maybe play them both in a parlay. Russell did not play in the fourth quarter the other night in what was a close game, so he was essentially benched. He scored his 8th point middle of the third quarter. He never scored again. I don't think that was an accident. And even Denver after the game, I think it was Bruce Brown who said, every time Russell was on the court, we found him and we attacked him. And in the Memphis series, in the Golden State series, there were people that the Lakers didn't have to guard, whether it's Draymond Green. You know, there were certain guys on Grizzlies who were non-shooters. Denver doesn't have any non-shooters. They play 5 shooters. They're going to attack weak defenders. So I don't think with Russell's lack of defense, his lack of size, that's going to be exploited. So I think his minutes go down. I think Hachimura's minutes go up. So I think it's 11.5 points for Hachimura. It's 13.5 for Russell. Again, play him whichever way you want it. I think Hachimura minutes replace the Russell minutes here tonight.
Hachimura, 17 off the bench last game, and of course made a big impact defensively against Nikola Jokic in the fourth quarter, really helped change the game. Last couple minutes here, Will. You're always getting ahead of it in the NFL with win totals. A certain team in the NFC West that is not the Arizona Cardinals you think is going to have a bad season?
I wish I got this in last week because I did bet it last week, and I had a feeling it would go down as a few of these I've given out have. Rams, you could still get them under 6.5. Obviously, 7.5 last week was better, and shop around, maybe get the best number here. But to me, this is a rebuilding year. They got their championship, and they're going to have a rough year here, you know, as they did last year. And I know you don't like to play the win-loss game, Lombardi, but if you just look at the schedule, it's not friendly. The first game is at Seattle. Second game is the 49ers. Third game is at the Bengals. At the Colts is the fourth game, and then they play Philly. So you're probably looking at a 1-4, maybe a 2-3. And once you get in a hole like this, do you start to look ahead and, you know, can Stafford stay on the field? You start to look maybe towards next year. To me, getting to 7 wins is asking a lot for this team. It's a tough schedule. And, you know, Warren Sharp does a good job with these, and he evaluates the rest and who's at a disadvantage with the schedule. He had the Rams being at a very disadvantageous spot here with the lack of rest as opposed to their opponents. So throw that in there. But tough schedule, tough start. I'm going to go under on the Rams here. Ninth road game with the NFC team, so keep that in mind. Yeah, go ahead.
I think the rest thing is kind of, you know, important. But to me, they're going to be such a young team. They have no depth. That's the issue. To me, they have no depth. And if they get any injuries whatsoever to their team, you know, this is going to continue to fall apart. If Sean McVay can win 7 or 8 games with this team, nobody can name 3 players on their defense. You know, and Raheem Morris's challenge as a defensive coordinator, how is he going to manage this? Everybody's going to double Aaron Donald. Where else is the rush coming from? And they're going to play from behind quite a bit, I think, to me. And if they play from behind, it puts Stafford in a really tough spot because now that offensive line is going to have to run drop-back pass, which if we study Sean McVay's career and understand who Sean McVay is, he doesn't want to throw drop-back. He wants to throw play-action passes. And I think that really lines up to what you're saying.
Yep, just a 5-win season for the Rams last year. We'll see if they do go under that 6.5 this year. I agree with you, Will. I think they might be in the Caleb Williams sweepstakes for the #1 overall pick next year. Thanks for doing this.
All right, see you. Thanks,
buddy. Good call, Stormy.
That's Will Hill at not the Will Hill on Twitter. And we'll have plenty more NFL talk when we return with No Way or No Doubt. No Doubt, Michael. My favorite phrase in the land.